We have some Marley's tickets to give away. Be sure to listen for your chance to win those tickets. They're down 2-0 in their series against the Syracuse Crunch. It was a bit of an oucher the other night. Was it 8-5, the final? Oof.
It's one of those where you want to mix in a save there?
Oh, bad.
On both sides.
Well, no kidding. Well, I mean, at one point, though, I mean, you have to give the Marley's credit. They were rallying together. They were mounting some sort of comebacks. They were down 6-1. Ugh. So, I mean, when you think 8-5, they kind of
like what the Ducks experienced.
Yeah,
last
they
night.
Made it close, considering they were down 6-1. Carl Grundstrom got into the lineup. That was the player, the forward from Sweden we were talking about, who just a couple weeks ago the Leafs signed to a 3-year entry level contract. So he got into the game, picked up a goal and an assist. But too little, too late.
It's not going well.
Not going well. So saying that, the Marlies are going to need the fans to come on out to Ricoh Coliseum. So we're going to be giving tickets away. Game 4 Wednesday night at Ricoh. So listen for your chance for that Marlies ticket giveaway. We've been discussing quite a few things. Concussion protocol. Sidney Crosby's looking good. It's all about being active. Carla Koliakovo on Overdrive last week, who's dealt with concussion, said the best advice he can give someone who suffered a concussion is to actually be active. See how your body's doing. See how it can do when you exert yourself as opposed to just laying around and not doing anything at all. Also discuss the leadership with the Ducks. If they don't win, if these Game 7 demons come back to haunt them, do we start to point the finger at the leadership group?
And how can you not, right? Like, I mean, this is just...
Craig Button agreed.
The pattern is just a little bit too alarming not to wonder what's behind it. Because, as Button pointed out last hour, their leadership assessment last season after they failed to win a playoff series where they held a 3-2 lead and then lost back-to-back games, Game 6 and Game 7 against Nashville, a pattern that they repeated in 2015 and 2014 and 2013 in playoff series losses. Their solution to it last year was firing Bruce Boudreau, and he's not there anymore.
Hey, Randy already put his hands up.
Not me.
Don't blame me. I wasn't here for any of those Game 7 collapses.
But it's an interesting point to make because it's all about the leadership of this team. And as Craig said in the last hour, they chose it was the Bruce Boudreau leadership that they had to get rid of. It's tough to think of this organization without Ryan Getzlaf and Corey Perry. They've been the pillars. They've been so successful. But they're also the common denominator in these failures. And they, we've talked a lot about the stats that these guys have put up. And it's incredible careers. And incredible careers in the postseason. And yet, time means everything. And they've come up short in so many big games in the playoffs.
Yeah, and you look at it, like last night they get blown out by the Edmonton Oilers. They were blown out in 2015 by the Chicago Blackhawks in Game 7 when they got down 5-0. They were blown out by the LA Kings in a Game 7 in 2014 when they got down 5-0. And Perry and Getzlaf in those Game 6, Game 7 combos where they've lost both and blown 3-2 leads have not produced. Getzlaf hasn't had a goal in any of those 8 games from 2013 on to 2016. In any of those games, he did not score. And Corey Perry scored a couple of goals in those big games that they needed to win or could have won to advance. But they both came, down 4-0 to the Chicago Blackhawks, down 5-0 to the LA Kings. So really, with the game on the line in Game 6s and Game 7s in these playoff series where Perry and Getzlaf have been the core of this team, the leadership group of this team, they've just not shown up on the score sheet.
And we'll see what happens in the next couple of days, but there are two really intriguing stories here with Washington and Anaheim. And if they end up losing in their series, what do they do next? Because they've been so close, and yet they feel so far away from winning a Stanley Cup. And for Leaf fans, you look at Anaheim, and do they have to make major changes? And if they make major changes, they're probably a little bit more willing to trade a few pieces on the blue line. They already probably will because, it's an embarrassment of riches for the talent that they have on the blue line, and they want to get better in different areas. So that is a team that we've always said that the Leafs, if they do go through the trade market to get better on the blue line, that's a team that they look after. But, man, you look at teams that have been talented enough to win and yet have not been able to win when it matters the most in the playoffs.
It's Mark Rowe, SportsCenter host, Dave Festchuk, sports columnist at Toronto Star. How about the Ottawa Senators? So they beat the New York Rangers in overtime, But the big story there, and yes, Kyle Turris getting credit where credit's due, he gets the OT winner. But the player getting the most love is Chris Neal. 2 minutes and 26 seconds is what he played.
Hey, quality over quantity, Andy.
Win after Tanner Glass. We speculated this. We wondered if Chris Neal would go into the lineup to match the New York Rangers lineup of aggression there with Tanner Glass. And we know what Tanner Glass was able to do when they were on home ice and getting the crowd all rallied up and they end up winning the game. And a lot of people said, well, why would you put Chris Neal in there? What is he going to do? Well, they're not wrong. 2 minutes and 26 seconds. What is a player who's playing that really going to do? But I think then you underestimate the presence of a player like that. I mean, this is a guy who hasn't played a lot down the stretch of the regular season, had not played in a playoff game at all. But there's something about a guy like that, just the mere presence of him, that can change the team. And that clearly was a factor there because everyone was talking about him, including the coach, Guy Boucher.
Well, I wasn't just on the bench. I think it was also before the game. He's a player that that's, you know, gained a lot of respect over the years, not just from his peers, but I think from the fans and from the other players in the league. And you know, he's not just a tough guy. He's a guy that's a character guy. He's a guy that's brought a lot of leadership to our group, and he's had a terrific attitude during the games that he didn't play in the playoffs. And I'm sure it's difficult to deal with when you're not playing, whether it's him or Kelly and those guys. But I think that I've always thought, and I said it being in the playoffs, we will need everybody depending on what we need for particular games. And following the two games in New York, it was clear that we needed to answer back some of the liberties they were taking on our skill guys, and the, you know, answer back with our own gritty guys. And I thought he did a terrific job with his presence. I thought he did a terrific job of what he needed to do on the ice, but also off the ice. And yes, it did lift our guys up. And a lot of our skilled guys played a terrific game. And I thought they felt protected, and they felt that we were able to answer back what the opponent was giving us.
So you fight fire with fire is what he's admitting.
Yeah, but you know, that gets overblown to some degree. Like, I don't doubt that it made an impact. I don't doubt that it maybe, you know, brings up a group's kind of energy to see a guy out there doing what Chris Neal did in those couple of key minutes. But I don't think it really affected the fact that Erik Karlsson remains a hockey genius. Like, that. How about the game he had? Like, three assists, plays 31 minutes, played, I think it was like six, he played like five and a half of the last 7 minutes of regulation. Like, the guy was just on the ice constantly, and he gets like 12 shot attempts. I mean, he is just controlling play in a way that very few players in this league, if any players in this league, can control play. And to do it in a playoff game, high stakes moment like that, that to me was just an absolutely virtuoso performance.
I love the Chris Neal story. I want to believe in the Chris Neal story. Chris Neal did not win that game for the Ottawa Senators. And whether or not it's the right move to have him in the lineup is another thing. But the stars have to be the stars for the Sens team to come through. And you know, Erik Karlsson, obviously the conversation begins with him. And that Derek Brassard goal, it only happens because Karlsson sees that pass and is able to execute a pass that, watching it live, you thought, how did he pull that off? And then the goal happens, and you think, this guy is continually, like, I don't know what he's playing at in terms of health-wise, if he's 60, 70%. It's just unbelievable to watch him. And then a guy like Kyle Turris, who, you know, you kind of always want a little bit more from Kyle Turris. He scores a really big goal. And I was extremely impressed with what the Senators were able to do, not just because of the first period that they have going down 0-2 at home against the Rangers. You know, they were manhandled by the Rangers in games 3 and 4. And I get it. We've established on so many of these shows that there is no such thing as momentum from game to game, but there is such thing as a team being better than the other team. And I truly thought that the Rangers were the much better team in this series. You know, the Sens stole game 2. It really should have been a 3-1 series. And the Sens put up a big performance, especially late in the game, to kind of, I don't want to say steal a game, but kind of will their way to a victory, and are now up 3-2 at Madison Square Garden, a place that I guess in the past they've been better at, although in this series there's some demons there.
To me, it always depends on the outcome of the game, because the Ottawa Senators won. Mm-hmm. What Chris Neal added to the team. And again, you never want to take away from because if the players and the coach are saying that he added something, then who are we to say he didn't?
Right. Right? But if Derek Brassard doesn't score that goal, we're talking about, okay, let's kneel back
out. But here's the thing.
Out,
if like, Chris Neal, if they, so he takes, what is he ends up taking, so he got two for roughing and he got
yeah, 12 minutes of penalty.
So he took 12 minutes because essentially, I mean, he smacked Tanner Glass in the face when right. Tanner Glass wasn't, you know, he basically jumped him, right? Tanner Glass, it wasn't a willing opponent. There wasn't like, okay, let's drop our gloves and fight. So that could have looked like a really dumb thing to do, or it could have been absolutely brilliant, which because, you know, New York not capitalizing, and then, of course, Ottawa walking away with the win. To me, that is walking such a fine line, because how we're talking about it today really depends on the outcome of the game. And it's because Ottawa won that we're sitting here saying this was an incredible presence, and he brought so much to the lineup, even though it was only 226, but just the mere fact that he was there and before the game and intermissions and all that. If New York ended up winning, it's, can you believe he took that stupid penalty, and this is why you don't put guys like that in the lineup, right? So to me, it's this score that dictates what we're talking about today.
Without a doubt. I mean, if Erik Karlsson doesn't control the game the way he controls that game, doesn't have those three assists, doesn't make that incredible pass like Rowe talks about, this doesn't happen. And you're saying, why would you waste a spot in your lineup for a guy who's going to play 2 minutes, get 12 minutes in penalties, and play five shifts, and not really contribute anything other than a couple of face washes to a guy who's been, yeah, Tanner Glass has been a bee in your bonnet, and you wanted to take care of him. But that stuff gets overblown. But you know what? The reason I think it gets overblown, too, guys, is because there's so little of it in today's game. Because they've dedicated the third and fourth line now generally to speed guys who can, you know, chip in on depth scoring, you just don't have Chris Neal's in the game anymore, so it stands out, and you know people like it. I think the players have to applaud it because it's the hockey way.
Look, it still gets the fans going, and this is still the ongoing conversation that we have about, you know, fighting in the game, is that you say, you know, you don't want it or it doesn't have a place, but every time it happens, there's not one person still sitting in their seat in that arena.
Yes, but did it turn around the game in the third period? Did it have any effect on the third period?
Many times it does, though.
Okay, but
like
did,
many times
did it,
a guy this, fighting gets it going
this,
for his team,
on this
right?
topic with Chris Neal being in the lineup. It didn't.
No, I mean, it happened
and,
it
again,
happened
I'm not saying
second.
It was the wrong call to have him in the lineup. Just saying, in terms of the product on the ice, you have to make sure that Chris Neal isn't too much of a negative to take that spot in the lineup because he's only playing 2 minutes.
Well, we saw what happened with the Winnipeg Jets or in the regular season, mm-hmm. right, when they were... I can't remember who their opponent was now. I'm blanking. But when they decided to put tough guys in, you end up taking penalties. You end up getting a suspension, right? Like that, you have to be careful too, right? Because sometimes the energy guy can have a wee bit too much energy.
Right. And the fact that, like, we know what Guy Boucher thinks about Chris Neal because he hadn't played him in like a month. He hadn't played him since April 9th. This was about a specific task in a specific moment where Tanner Glass had been causing them issues and they felt they needed to address it. And they felt he was the only guy that could address it. He went out there for his five shifts and on one key one where he took 12 minutes in penalties combined, he addressed it. And I guess, hey, whatever that's worth in terms of sports psychology and a boost to the morale of your group, let's just say it worked.
Mm-hmm. All right. We're going to have Bob McKenzie, who's going to be joining us. I want to get to some topics that he discussed in his Bobcast, which is pretty interesting. I guess somebody asked him, what are the chances of players wearing full facial protection? And he gives his thoughts on that. And then he gives his thoughts on the offside. I think we're all done with that call. Do you think we could get rid of it next year?
We can only hope. We can only
dream. I mean, is it
you
just
would think
like...
that if there's one thing that video review is made for... It's a black and white or a blue and white situation, like an offside. Like there's two sports that come to mind where video review is almost flawless, tennis and volleyball, because it's so easy because they have the Hawkeye
yeah.
that it's clearly in or out. No one really complains about it. It's you kind of live with it. And I get it. It's totally different in hockey because you're dealing with a human being skating over a line, and the skate might be off the ice. And
does he have control of the puck when
right.
he's going? I mean,
there's
we also don't make things. It easier on ourselves all these friggin' rules.
And yet, that goaltender interference is very frustrating, but it's become such a frustrating part of the game. And as much as you're going to get rid of the one Matt Duchene goal that was an egregious offside that should never have happened, I feel like it's taking away from the game more than it's adding to the game.
Yeah. So we'll discuss that with him a little bit more, go into detail as he put it out on his Bobcast. We do still have Marley's tickets to give away, so they're going to be back home for games 3 and 4. So listen to your chance to win that. And Travis Dermott, defenseman with the Toronto Marlies, is going to be joining us in about 40 minutes' time. Just talk about how the playoffs going so far for him. And I don't know how far ahead he's looking. I know we're looking far ahead because this is a player we're talking about who could really put up a good fight in training camp and really catch the eye of head coach Mike Babcock as potentially getting a start with the Leafs on the blue line. That seems to be the consensus around a lot of hockey pundits. So don't know if he's looking that far ahead. We are. We'll see how much we can get out of him on that as you continue to listen to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050 and streaming online, tsn.ca. Team Canada now up 6-0 over Belarus. Mitch Marner still with 2 assists in that game. So we'll continue to keep you posted on how the Canadians are doing overseas at the World Championship. As mentioned earlier, William Nylander and Team Sweden 7-2 victory over Germany picked up 2 goals and an assist. As we welcome you back into Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050, streaming online, tsn.ca. I'm your host, Danny Petrillo, alongside sports columnist for the Toronto Star, Dave Festchuk, and sports center host for TSN, Mr. Mark Rowe. And now it's time for our TSN Hockey Insider, Bob McKenzie. This Hockey Insider is brought to you by Finance It. How you doing, Bob?
Excellent. How are you guys doing today?
We're good. We picked 2 topics that we heard from your Bobcast that we found very intriguing. And, of course, one of them, and I know we had you on last week and you were discussing this already, was the whole offside thing. But maybe you could just explain, as you did in the Bobcast, why you liked it at first and why you wouldn't be sad if we had a funeral for it.
Well, first off, I don't think we're going to have a funeral for it. I don't think they're taking steps back. Once you go down that video review road, it's difficult to say we're going to get rid of something that we think was an improvement. So I should say that up front. So it's just pie in the sky, wishful thinking on my part that it's just become so tedious, I find. It's taken away a lot of the spontaneity from the game, and it's become difficult to get it right. And the more technology you have, the more difficult it becomes. Instead of it becoming easier, it becomes harder because you keep cutting things finer and finer and finer. And no camera angle at the end of the day is 100% conclusive in every situation. So you end up with a bunch that could go either way and are inconclusive, and you spend a lot of time, and they are taking care of them quicker. So I suppose that's the bright side. So I'd prefer for it to be gone. But I thought when it came in, the point I made on the Bobcast was very simple, and it's this, that I knew there would be controversy over goaltender interference video reviews, because that's a highly subjective thing, and it was intended to be highly subjective. When they put the video review in for coach's challenge on goalie interference, they made it abundantly clear up front, this is not the war room deciding on this. This is not the same person viewing this the way, you know, if there's a kicked in goal, Mike Murphy in the hockey ops department, he basically does 99.9% of all the kicked in goals. And they've got specialists who are there pretty much every night who rule on whether pucks are high-sticked in or whether they're kicked in or whether a puck crosses the line. But on goalie interference, well, all they were saying was, we're not going to officiate by the war room. We are going to let the referees have a second look at their work to decide. And so there's, last time I checked, I think 42 refs. And so you've got 42 different views on interpretations on what goalie interference is. And therefore, it's a highly subjective thing. But offside is not subjective. Offside is entirely 100% objective. And I assumed, what could go wrong? I mean, if the more camera angles we've got, the better view we have, we're going to get it right more than we're going to get it wrong. And it's going to be objective, and there's not going to be any debate. And guess what? There's been nothing but debate.
But do you not think then with, I guess, a lot of outcry from people just thinking that it is slowing down the game, the NHL wouldn't take a look at that in any way?
No, not at all. No, I think they'll continue to expedite them as best they can. It'll be interesting now because of the controversy in Edmonton, which is a big deal right now, talking about the back-to-back games with the goalie interference calls that went against the Oilers. I'm sure General Manager Peter Chiarelli, and he kind of hinted or mentioned this to Frank Saravelli in the story he did on TSN.ca on the weekend, that the preference, there are general managers whose preference would be that the war room does take over, that the interpretation of it, that the same person who's doing a game on Friday night, a Saturday night, on a Sunday night, would be the ultimate final authority on whether something's goalie interference or not, so there's a little more consistency as opposed to leaving it from referee to referee to referee. And as I said, I think part of the reason this thing got instituted in the first place was because the referees insisted that they don't have somebody looking over their shoulder on every call that they make, specifically goalie interference. So I don't anticipate any huge changes. And as I said, they had a chance at the general manager's meetings in Boca in March to maybe reword offside so that we don't have to worry about whether the skate's on the ice or off the ice for the entry, and they chose not to even do that. So it's status quo, and I don't imagine there'll be any dramatic alterations over the course of the summer.
So, Bob, it's Leafs lunch, so let's talk a little Leafs. We're going to be speaking to Travis Dermott, the Marlies defenseman, and coming up after your segment. And I'm wondering, from what you're hearing, how prominently does Dermott figure into the Maple Leafs' plans on D next season?
I think quite prominently. I think the view of the organization is that he's knocking on the door. And what knocking on the door means is they think he's probably ready to play in the National Hockey League, but he's going to have to prove it in training camp. And you know, and so absent a poor training camp, my guess is Travis Dermott starts next season with the Toronto Maple Leafs, and then it's a matter of trying to figure out where he slots. Can you play him in a top four role? Is he strictly a third pair guy until he gets his feet wet? But they're very happy with the way that he's played. You know, he's impacted the game in all areas, defensively, offensively. He's not technically a big guy, because he's a sub 6 foot defenseman, but he's really solid. And I don't have his height and weight in front of me here, but I want to say that he's 5'11 and 200 or 200 plus pounds or close to it. And he can play a hard game, and he doesn't physically dominate people, but he gets in people's face. He's abrasive. Quite often in junior hockey, as well as his first year pro, he's been the kind of guy that rubs people the wrong way, the opponents, and a lot of guys on the ice want to take a run at him and get after him. But he defends extremely well. I think he's really picked up that part of the pro game very well. He's a good, strong skater. He moves the puck well, and he's got a good shot from the point, and he contributes offensively. So I think he's got all the elements that you're looking for in a National Hockey League defenseman. And as I said, if he doesn't have a bad training camp and conversely has a real good training camp, I see him in the starting six for the Leafs next season. And then figure out where he goes from there, which is either rocketing up the charts, potentially somebody that you could play in your top four, or if things weren't to go well and maybe needs more seasoning time, could find himself back with the Marlies, depending on how it all unfolds.
And in terms of what's going on in the Stanley Cup playoffs right now, Leaf fans will be very interested to see what happens in Game 7 between the Oilers and the Ducks, for obvious reasons, but also that Anaheim team. You know, if they lose another Game 7, you have to think that changes are on the horizon. And we've often talked about their blue line, and that might be a destination where the Leafs could acquire someone. What do you expect from the Ducks this offseason if they don't achieve their goals?
It's a good question. I think it makes sense that they would trade a defenseman, and not because of their failure necessarily, so much as they've just got too many good ones and too many good young ones, and they need more depth up front. One of the things we're seeing here is, even if the Ducks advance, right now it's a two-line attack. They're getting virtually nothing from anybody not on the Getzlaff line or not on the Kessler line. And, you know, even the Oilers last night got more from Letestu and Cassian on a third line, third or fourth line, depending on how, at this point, Nugent Hopkins and Eberle seem to have morphed into the fourth line somehow. In a 7-1 win, they were minus one. But the Ducks are not getting enough balanced offense, and some of that's, you know, injury related. They picked up Eaves as a rental at the deadline, and he's injured. But that's allowed Corey Perry to reemerge on the top line and play real well in Game 5, and was still a fact, could have been a factor in Game 6 if the Ducks hadn't gotten blown out so badly early on. So, yeah, they definitely need more help up front, and they've got the ability to move some guys on the blue line. So I'm sure regardless of whether they're unsuccessful or successful in these playoffs, that's something that's likely to happen in the offseason.
We're talking to Bob McKenzie, our TSN Hockey Insider, because we've been asking everyone else, why not ask you? Just the recent news coming out, we know Rene Fassel is going to actually be speaking to the media tomorrow, but we've been kind of getting some conflicting reports. Yes, they're still negotiating about the NHL players going to the Olympics. No, they're not. The door is closed. What are you hearing?
Well, I mean, trying to figure out the best way to characterize this. We'll put it this way. The National Hockey League has not yet announced who's hosting the All-Star game next year. And so people see that and they think, well, if they haven't announced who's hosting the All-Star game, well, then maybe they're holding out hope. And yet all the vibe and all the back channel chatter that's going on is, no, we're not going. It's done. It's over. Kaput. And I think the only reason they haven't announced who's hosting the All-Star next year is because if the Players Association did come to the National Hockey League and say, we'll extend the CBA or we'll make this concession or we'll make that concession, then I think the door could be reopened. But I don't think that's even a remote possibility on the part of the NHLPA. And so I'm taking it face value that we're not, the NHLers are not going to the Olympics, and that, you know, I don't think that the, you know, Rene Fassel and the IIHF are negotiating with the NHL as much as Rene might be talking to the IOC, maybe talking to the PA and seeing if there are any last-ditch things that could be done. So, you know, technically, is it 100% closed? But no, it's not. But I'm in the 99.9% category right now.
Going back to the NHL and the Ducks, and we were discussing that, you know, their past history when they don't do well, and it's not just the Ducks. I mean, it's really any team. You look at the coach, and a lot of times you'll end up relieving the coach of his duties. When it comes to the Washington Capitals, you look at what Barry Trotz is doing, how he's maneuvering the lineup as best he can with Alexander Ovechkin on the third line in the last game. It ends up working. They end up getting spread out scoring with Backstrom, Kuznetsov, and Ovi scoring the final three goals there that give them the win. He's practicing again on the third line. If they don't make it past the second round yet again, how can you hang this? And not that I'm saying they would, but how can you hang it on Barry Trotz when it just seems like he's doing everything possible to get the best out of this team?
Well, I don't think you can hang it on him. And yet I'm not sure you can hang it on any one individual either, whether it's Ovechkin or Backstrom or, you know, maybe it's Holtby. I don't know. They've played very well. The Caps have played very well in this series. That, you know, that because they fell behind 3-1, they kind of got lost in the shuffle that they've actually played quite well. They've probably been the better of the two teams. But it's a results-oriented business, especially in the playoffs when you don't get loser points. And, you know, you're facing elimination. And now you leave yourself wide open to the vagaries of hockey. And when you're playing a team that's got Crosby and got Malkin and got Fleury, I mean, any one of those guys could put in a performance tonight that no matter how well you play and no matter what Holtby does and no matter what Ovechkin or Backstrom or Kuznetsov do, you know, you can get a bad bounce, or one of those big-time players for Pittsburgh could stick a dagger right through your heart and you're done. Because you've put yourself in this position. And people can come up with all the numbers they want. You can find the numbers to fit your narrative. If you want to make it out that Holtby and Ovechkin and these guys are tremendous clutch performers in elimination games, there are numbers there that will absolutely back you up 100% on that. If you want to turn around and say that these guys are a bunch of choking dogs, that every time they get in this situation, they find a way to lose it, you can find numbers to fix that narrative as well. All it strikes me is that at crucial moments in a hockey game or in a series, you need certain individuals to step up and do something. And Unfortunately for the Caps, they got themselves behind the eight ball, down 3-1. And, you know, and to my point, the third period, they were down 2-1 to the Pittsburgh Penguins in an elimination game, and Backstrom scored a goal, and then Kuznetsov scored a goal, and Ovechkin scored a goal, and Holtby was magnificent, stopping 12 shots, all 12 shots in the third period, and I'd say a half a dozen of them were grade A scoring opportunities. So in that situation, and it's really situational, that was a 20-minute period where the four best players on the Washington Capitals stood up and they delivered big time. So no, they did not choke, and no, they did not allow the weight of past failures to crush them, you know. But there might be a 5-minute period tonight where Malkin or Crosby do something utterly spectacular and Washington will lose the game, and people are going to trot out the narrative that, you know, Trotz isn't a good coach, or that Ovechkin isn't clutch, or and what have you. And it's just hockey, and it's just situations where you have to be really good in that window of the game when it matters the most. And even taking out people's save percentage or power play or penalty kill, you can trot out 60-minute numbers, you can trot out playoff records, seasonal numbers, and all of that. But the great thing about the random game of hockey is that there's usually a 5 or a 7 or a 15-minute period in the game where you need to be really, really good. And if you are, you win. And if you're not, you lose. And that's hockey.
Well, sticking on the topic of randomness, I don't know if you enjoy telling us all that there is no momentum from game to game.
I do enjoy that.
Well, I get a lot of enjoyment of you telling us all the time. And if you're a Capitals fan, well, you don't like that fact. If you're an Oilers fan, despite the fact you won 7-1, you don't like it. And if you're a Senators fan going into tomorrow night after, you know, such an emotional victory on the weekend, you don't like it either, but then again, we don't know what to expect, which makes these series so much fun.
Absolutely. And, you know, and you're right, and people have selective memories when, or a selective application of the momentum or no momentum theory when it suits your purposes. And you know, so the Edmonton fans are saying, yes, you're right, there is no momentum. We proved that. But we've got, you know, these 4 years in a row where the Ducks have been terrible in Game 6 and then terrible in Game 7 on home ice, and they've lost each of the last 4 years doing that. So that trumps the no momentum from game to game theory. So you come up with whatever. It's, as I said, everybody's got a narrative in the playoffs, and you find out what numbers or what evidence you believe fits your narrative, and then you run with it.
Yeah, I like that. That's usually what I do at every show. All right, Bob. Thanks for taking the time. We'll see you later tonight.
Thanks, guys.
That is Bob McKenzie, our TSN Hockey Insider. This Hockey Insider brought to you by Finance It. Monthly payment plans for big dreams and everyday budgets. When we come back, we'll be giving away tickets to Game 4 of the Marlies game at Rico Coliseum. And we'll have Toronto Marlies defenseman Travis Dermott join us here on Leafs Lunch. So don't go anywhere. You're listening to TSN 1050, streaming online, tsn.ca.
Over the far side, back over, Dermott, wait, shoot, scores! Travis Dermott makes it 3-0.
Get out of your vehicle lease ASAP. Over 200,000 customers per month looking to take over your lease. What a relief. Go to leasebusters.com. All right, we have Marlies tickets to give away Game 4. They're down 2-0 in the series, so they need fan support. Here is the trivia question. Be the first player. You know, I was doing so well.
Well,
no, it's okay. Be the first caller.
Also, they're players.
They're players.
They could be.
Well, they're players or they play as. There's a difference.
See, we got you going.
You get me near the end of the show now when I can finally get these lights out of my eyes. They're killing my head. Be the first caller in with the answer to this question. Who is the player who was in the lineup for the first time? The player just recently signed to an entry-level contract by the Toronto Maple Leafs, who was in the Marlies lineup and picked up a goal and an assist. 416-870-1050. Who was the player just recently signed to an entry-level contract by the Leafs, who was in the Marlies lineup last game and picked up a couple points? And you will win a pair of tickets to the Marlies game on Wednesday night, Game 4. Andy Petrillo alongside Dave Festchuk, Mark Rowe. And Mark, I'm a little concerned for you. I'm not going to lie.
Why?
Because I have to do? So, no. This is me actually expressing concern because I have to stay here after the show because doing the panel tonight. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering if you were going to stick around. I was going to say, let's just go grab something to eat. and you said you have to go home.
Yes.
Because you have a stranger coming to your house to buy your patio furniture.
Yep.
And I'm concerned. Why do you have, like, I don't know if you should be trusting somebody to come to your house, so you don't know.
Well, we'll find out tomorrow if I'm here for Leafs Lunch.
No, I think you need to text me the entire time that that person is there just to make sure you're still alive.
Do you want me to FaceTime you the whole time?
I think you should. And then I will...
Because you...
I will tell. I will yell at that person through the phone.
Okay. That would scare them.
Yes. I don't know. I can't trust anyone into my
phone. You find this very fascinating. I don't...
Because I find it fascinating that we do, like, we're in a day and age where we just allow strangers into our home. I also I find that fascinating. I find it fascinating that, you know, we jump into strangers' cars. I mean, I do it. Like, I use Uber, right? But I don't let people into my home. At least when I'm by myself, I would never let anyone in.
Well, the question is, Ro, what is your check and balance on this? Like, do you have any recourse? Say this guy who's buying your patio furniture mm-hmm. seems like a nice fella.
Right.
Apparently has the money to buy your high-end patio furniture.
It's true.
Let's just say he showed up with a knife and said, give me all your money. I'm going to take you for everything you owe. I'm going to duct tape you to the kitchen chair and ransack your house. What would you do?
Wow. You thought about that script.
I have Andy on FaceTime. That's my go-to. And I have,
but you're duct taped to the kitchen chair at
right,
this point.
And I have my lovely neighbor, Liz, around 75 years old.
Oh, yeah, she's going to do some damage.
Yeah, she would probably give him cookies.
Wait, but he's not coming into your home. Like, you take him straight to your backyard.
Yeah, you're not coming inside.
You need
house.
To keep a 10-foot distance at all times. Okay. I would not, like, approach.
Should I bring a baseball bat to this?
You know what? Why not? You know what? I say you could even have a knife in your hand. Just say you're cooking. That's how I answer my door sometimes.
Put your knife in hand?
Yes.
Are you serious?
I will answer the door
you're
with
kidding.
A knife in my hand sometimes.
You're kidding.
No. If I And I'll be like, I'm cooking. Hi, can I
Andy.
Help you?
Really?
Listen, as a woman, you need to watch yourself. These are things we need to do. Of course I do. Depends. I mean, sometimes I actually just don't answer the door at all. I'm like, go away.
Sometimes I just bring the mace, but...
Yeah, I'm like, I don't even answer the door, because why? If I don't know you and I'm not expecting you, I'm not going to answer the door. Other times...
But
can I just admit that I also do it for poops and giggles? It's really funny to see the look on somebody's face when you answer the door with a knife in your hand. I'm like, oh, I was just chopping up some garlic. Like, hi.
Well, yeah, I hear what you're saying.
If you're thinking about stepping into my house, you might want to think again.
If it was an assailant, though, Andy, think this through. If it was somebody that had come with a idea,
do you think they're going to knock on the door?
Yes, that's a good point. What are the? Let's run the numbers on that. How many assault cases or home invasions begin with the person knocking on the door? Probably not that many. I'm not a cop. I don't know. But my question would be: don't you think that the knife might end up in their hand very shortly?
But they're not expecting it.
Okay.
They're actually expecting you to answer the door like, oh, hey, hi, what are you selling?
Right.
Then boom, whoops, psycho woman lives here.
Okay.
That's how I roll.
That's an interesting way to go. So plus, you got your guard dog, right?
Okay. So you want a full report?
I want a full report on this stranger who's coming to your house.
Okay.
To pick up your patio furniture.
I'm more afraid to sell stuff by mail order because I've been screwed by mail order before. So I don't mind the house face-to-face thing. Sell it on Kijiji, shake hands, because you get a feeling about people, don't you? Like, unless you're...
Yeah, and then what if you get a grimy feeling? What do? Just tell them to get lost?
Yeah, you don't open the door. You kind of get a bad feeling and you head back inside.
I'm selling it to someone else.
But I'd rather do the face-to-face thing. Oh, I'm with you, man.
Okay.
Good luck, though. Know.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I appreciate that you feel for me there.
Any self-defense training in your background?
No, not at... I'm undefeated in fights. That's my defense.
Oh, I know?
Yeah. I had older brothers that took care of that.
Oh,
jeez.
Okay.
They intimidated everyone in school.
So you're the runt of the litter?
Yes.
That's a nice way of putting it. Yeah. We've been updating everyone on how Leafs are doing at the World Championship. As mentioned a couple days ago, Nylander, Team Sweden were in action against Germany. It was a 7-2 victory. Nylander picked up 2 goals and an assist today. 6-0 victory for Team Canada over Belarus. Marner picked up 2 assists in that. And then handing out Player of the Game award was head coach Mike Babcock. Handed it on over to Braden Point. So he's on hand, and I guess he got the honors today to do that. So there's your Leaf report from the World Championship and how the players over there are doing. We're waiting on Travis Dermott, the Toronto Marlies defenseman. Marlies are down 2-0 in that series to the Syracuse Crunch. Now, this is a best of 7, so the first round best of 5. That's where they defeated the Albany Devils. Now they moved on to round 2. But the last game, it was a tough one. It was an 8-5 win for Syracuse. Could have been worse, though, because the Marlies were actually down 6-1
It's never good when you say it could have been worse, though.
Well, I mean, it could have been a greater deficit, but I mean, the Marlies fought back.
Right.
They gave up eight goals,
but it could have been worse.
Could have been worse. They were making it close, but then boom, no, 8-5 is your final. So, do we have a winner for those tickets? Because I don't want to say the name of the person I'm about to say when he was the answer to our question to the Marlies tickets giveaway. Do we have? Okay, good. So, Carl Grundstrom, he was the answer to the trivia question. The Leaf who signed the entry-level contract, got into the lineup, picked up a goal and an assist, obviously in that loss. But it'll be interesting to see just, you know, how, and I'm sure you want the team to stay in the playoffs as long as they can, because you also want to see players like Dermot, who we just had Bob McKenzie on, say is a guy who's knocking on the door to start in the NHL next year. Really, it's in his own hands. They believe he has what it takes. Now he just needs to prove it in training camp. And then you want them to also continue in the playoffs because you want to see what Carl Grundstrom can do here on North American ice.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I think, look, when you talk to people around this club, around the league, I think Travis Dermott's penciled in as a guy who can play on this blue line. And I think it's one of their only answers when you look at, like, the free agent class is not that compelling. You know, trades are possible. I don't doubt that they're going to dip their toe in the water of the trade market, especially around the expansion draft and teams that need to move players at the risk of losing them. And maybe Anaheim will be a fit, as you pointed earlier in the show, Mark. Maybe Anaheim's surplus of D comes on the market. But the problem with that is that the Leafs aren't the only team out there shopping for D. So the idea that you might want to, you might have to use your internal guys, the guys you've been cooking and brewing in the minors, makes a lot of sense, and Dermott seems like the kind of kid that could jump in and possibly play in the NHL next season.
Yeah, I don't know about you. I don't see the Leafs making that Adam Larson-type deal that the Oilers made, which would be a significant price of a Marner or a Nylander for someone like that. With Travis Dermott, like, the answer to your question from Bob McKenzie should say it all. Like, Bob isn't going to go on a ledge and say that comment that he's definitely going to be a factor at the beginning of next year, unless, you know, he's got some pretty credible sources that are telling him that as we move forward. So it's a pretty exciting time for a future Leaf like Travis Dermott.
Well, speaking of Travis Dermott, we welcome in now to Leafs Lunch, defenseman with the Toronto Marlies. How you doing, Travis?
Good. How are you guys?
We're great. Obviously, keeping an eye on how the Toronto Marlies are doing in the playoffs. Now you guys are getting set to come home. First two games on the road, and I'm sure you wanted better results. Down 2-0 now in that series. Can you just take us through the last game? Because also, you know, losing a guy like Gauthier, I know there was a hit there by Jake Dotchin. So there was guys missing. Obviously, new players in Carl Grundstrom going into the lineup. Rich Klum back in the lineup. So how do you wrap your head around a game like the last one, where it was an 8-5 loss?
Yeah, you know, we've had our fair share of changes in the lineup, and I mean, I don't think the guys are too worried about that. We're just coming into every game trying to, especially these past two games in Syracuse. I mean, we know what we have to work on to get a better result, and we've been working on that today, and then watching video, and just making sure that we're ready for these two home games.
With the Marlies this season, and I know there's been so much emphasis on defensemen within the organization of the Leafs, what have been the main things that you've been told to work on?
Honestly, I think just getting better and getting used to the pro game. I mean, it's a lot different from junior, where I played last year. And, I mean, just kind of getting into the speed and just getting used to playing against the older guys and the stronger and faster players. It takes a little bit to get used to, and I had my share of trials this year, getting used to that. And I mean, that's obviously the goal, to get up to the Leafs. But I mean, we're focused here right now, and I mean, whatever happens, happens.
You know, Travis, there's so much incentive there, given that you're part of this Leafs organization, and the Marlies really are just down the road from the Air Canada Center. And then you see what happens this spring with the Leafs making the playoffs and going on that run. And I want to know, what did that run do for your group, and specifically kind of the group of guys that are trying to make that next step as you are next season?
Oh, it's really exciting. I mean, seeing where the Leafs are going with all the management changes and then now the roster changes, and just how up it's looking for that team. It's pretty exciting knowing that we're in the organization, and we work hard enough, and we fit the roster that they want to play, then maybe we'll get an opportunity down the line. But I mean, it's pretty cool seeing what they're doing and being, I mean, somewhat a part of it, I guess, being in Toronto and, like you said, down the street. It's pretty cool watching them and the success that they had this year versus last year.
So, Travis, obviously, you're a New Market guy. You grew up alongside Connor McDavid. I think, if I'm not mistaken, you guys played since you were about 8 years old together. What have you made of his performance so far in these playoffs? Have you kept in touch? Have you been watching closely? What's the status with McDavid?
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously the player he is. So it's pretty cool seeing him and what he's going through. And, I mean, playoffs are obviously really exciting, so I'm giving him this space right now. I mean, we're not talking too much now, but I mean, I talked to his dad yesterday, so we're kind of in contact. I'm kind of not directly speaking every day, but I mean, he knows I'm there for him, and it's obviously really exciting. And he's got all his family and friends behind him, so it's pretty cool. Growing up, like you said, since I was 8, on and off playing with him, and kind of seeing his growth throughout the years, it's pretty cool seeing that, and it's obviously incentive seeing where he started and where he is now.
Well, and more importantly, give us the secret. How do you shut him down?
I don't know if I can spill that. Maybe I'll have to tell the Leafs guys that. But no, it's definitely hard. He's a real skilled guy, and defending him, you got to be really careful.
We're speaking with Toronto Marlies defenseman Travis Dermott. Travis, I know you know a lot of people kind of keep one eye on the Marlies just to see how the guys are doing, potential players with Toronto Maple Leafs next season. But for those who don't really know, if you had to describe your style of defense, what would it be?
Coming into this year, I'd say I was an offensive defenseman, but I'm pretty sure anyone who looked at my numbers this year probably wouldn't say that I am. I feel like I've transitioned kind of into more of a two-way guy and a player that hopefully I can excel at this level and future, hopefully the next level. So I feel like I've kind of changed my game and focused on defense this year. I mean, my coaches and my D partners, now I'm right now with Steven Alexi, and he's helped me a lot with the defensive part of the game. He came in and showed me a bunch of things, just making sure that I'm playing my defensive part first, and especially in playoffs, I feel like you have to focus on that. And then when the offense presents itself, that's when you jump in. You don't try to force things like that. And I feel like that's what I've been working on this year, just making sure I'm playing my sound defense and then picking my chances up front.
You know, Travis, I'm assuming you watched quite a few Leaf games this year. I mean, how is it fair to say that there's a real synergy between the way the Marlies are playing and the system you guys are playing and the way Babcock is running the Leafs? How do you see it with your eyes?
Yeah, I think we, I haven't been in any practices or anything like that, so I don't know their systems to a T, but just talking with our manager and coaches, it seems like we play pretty much the same style, so that if anyone does get the nod to play up top, they'll fit right in with the systems that we play here. And it's pretty cool to see that what we're doing here is working so well at the next level too. So it kind of gives a little more incentive to make sure that we're playing sound in our systems and just making sure that we're doing that first.
Travis, really appreciate you taking the time in the middle of the playoffs. Good luck in Game 3.
Yeah, thanks, Chris.
That is Travis Dermott, Toronto Marlies defenseman. He was drafted 34th overall in 2015, and he is the defenseman. You know, we just had our TSN Hockey Insider Bob McKenzie on saying he's the one that a lot of hockey pundits are saying is knocking on the door to make the Leafs next season. So, be interesting. Just keep an eye on him. Obviously, he's focused on the Marlies right now. They're down 2-0 to the Syracuse Crunch, and they have back-to-back games Tuesday, Wednesday at home. They want to stay in this series as long as possible.
And not give up 8 goals. There's analysis for you right there.
Some good, yeah. 3-1 was game one, so they lose 3-1 in game one.
Thanks, tips.
Yeah. No, I was thinking it. But how about Jake Dodson? Not to, like, pick on this guy, but Tampa Bay Lightning, he was the one. He was still in the minors as well when they played the Marlies and took out Kasperi Kapanen. And he ended up missing several weeks with an injury. Then he comes on up, plays with Tampa. That was the game near the end of the season with the Leafs. Goes knee-on-knee with Austin Matthews. And now it looks like in that 8-5 loss, he went knee-on-knee again, this time, though, with Freddie Gauthier. And Gauthier had to leave the game. That's another player we've been talking about of possibly being on the fourth line, you know, centering that fourth line for the Leafs next season.
Yeah, if Brian Boyle isn't a guy they re-sign, you could see Freddie Gauthier being there, because we all know Mike Babcock likes Freddie Gauthier, likes that he's 6'4 every day, as he says. So I wouldn't doubt it.
It's a good thing he's not the incredibly shrinking man, because that would be awkward for everybody. That's it for us here on Leafs Lunch. That is Mr. Mark Rowe. That is Dave Festchuk. I'm Andy Petrillo. We'll have a lot more to chat about tomorrow. There's only one game in the NHL tonight. That's Washington-Pittsburgh. Let's see if Washington can stay alive yet again. Thanks for checking in, everyone. We will chat with you tomorrow. Scotty Mack is coming up next.